This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. Today is Friday, March 27th, 2015, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Open Eyes, and hopefully this one will be very entertaining and informative for you guys, much like all of my others. Tonight is going to be a little bit different. We're changing things up just slightly for tonight's episode, and there's sort of a weird reason why. So for those of you who are not aware, this week has kind of been a very rough week for me on a personal level as far as my body is concerned. Wednesday, I had to go to the emergency room and spent about 6 hours in the emergency room, and it was rough. Tuesday, I believe, was when it happened. Anyways, whatever day, I had to go spend about 6 hours at the emergency room, and it was very rough. It was very tiring. It was very wear and tearing, and basically for really bad agonizing pain in my knee that had been going on for days. Well, we got that sort of resolved, and then tonight, I have basically been trying to deal with a high drop situation. And for those of you who are not aware of what that is, I know I've spoken about it before on the show, but for those of you who may not have heard, or for you new listeners out there, basically with the type of blindness that I have, the corneas are very, very thin. And occasionally the fluid from the inside of the eyes will bubble up basically into a blister on the edge of the cornea, basically. And it causes a lot of pain. It causes a lot of wateriness, and just it's a mess. It's a horrible experience, and I don't wish it on anybody. It feels like a giant stone basically be stuck in your eyes for ever, basically. I mean, it just does not go away until the blister decides to either break or diminish again. So because of this, I basically did not have the opportunity to prepare fully the amount of things that I wanted to do for the episode that I had originally planned to do tonight, which was that the topic would have been basically the old world order versus the new world order. I plan on doing that one then next week. I'm not going to be able to do it tonight because of all of these other extraneous circumstances that have occurred. So with that, basically, what I'm going to do is do something a little bit different. I'm going to speak about a few different topics. We don't have a topic that is going to be like, absolutely, this is the one topic of the night like I usually do. Tonight is going to be a few different topics that I'm going to cover. We're going to talk primarily about the actual issues and things that have gone on with our son, Seth, who is autistic. And because of that, for the entirety of this episode, I'm going to have a special guest, which is my wife, Jolene Robinson. So, hello, Jolene.
Why, hello.
I want to thank you for joining me on tonight's episode. I hit her with it basically kind of out of the blue and said, hey, honey, why don't we do this? Totally caught her unprepared, and she's having a severe lack of sleep. And so we'll see how this episode goes.
If I get mushy mouthed, then you know what's going on.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to get into the main topics of things after we do the news section, like I usually do in the beginning of the show here. But once we get there, we'll explain everything else as it goes. So on to the news. The big news on everybody's lips so far over the past few days has seemed to be the issues that have been surrounding the whole German Wings crash in the French Alps, essentially, and all of the stuff that's associated with that. For those of you who are not aware, basically a plane has crashed in this section of the Alps, and it they're expecting that all 144 people aboard are dead, that there's no chance of rescuing any of them alive. Just a horrific plane crash, essentially. Now, two things with this whole thing. First off, I'll give my kind of input and take, and I want to get your thoughts on this as well, honey. So one of the things that has come out with this crash is that, okay, so you have this crash that has occurred. 144 people have died. And in 1953, another plane crash landed. All who were aboard were killed. There were 44 people that were killed. And it happened in basically the exact same spot that this plane crash happened.
Oh, that's kind of spooky.
Not spooky at all, right? Yeah. I mean, it's very weird. And the numbers that are there are very odd as well. I mean, you know, the 144 and then 44. And as anybody that's out there knows, those numbers have some pretty deep significance, you know, especially the 144 number. But again, 44 can be kind of derived through that as well. So what is your take on this? What's kind of your first impression with that?
Okay, well, hearing the similarities between the two, what instantly comes to my mind is the whole, like, Titanic thing and how there's the author that wrote the book that came out before the Titanic happened, you know, the actual event happened, and how a lot of it is similar between each other, and now we have this. Now, granted, this is a real-world situation as opposed to a fiction, and then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, the same thing happens in real life. This is just, it's kind of weird that the two happen. It's like an echo, you know, an echo of events, you know, one happened then, and now the other's happening now, and it's...
Yeah, you sort of get the definite feel of the cycle of time, the cycle of time thing, right?
Yeah, it's a deja vu of time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of my impression with it, too. And that's a good call, actually, on the Titanic thing. I didn't think about that before. I'm kind of hitting her with this. We had not talked about this before. So
yeah, nothing's planned. Nothing's planned.
No. And so for those of you who don't know, the Titanic... Actually, before the crash happened, I believe it was about 10 years before the sinking of the Titanic happened, there was a book that was written, and I'm trying to remember exactly the title, but essentially it was a Disaster on the Titan or something along those lines. And basically, in the book, the exact same scenario that happened on the actual Titanic was written into the book, and this was years before the Titanic was even built.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty close to detail, considering, like, it was, like, the biggest ship hyped up, you know, at the time, was going to sail, I think, the same ocean.
Yeah, it crashed into an iceberg in the exact same area of the sea that the Titan had crashed in. You know, the name of the ship was the Titan, and then you have the Titanic, you know, and...
Yeah, just and I think like the crew or the capacity was roughly the same.
Yeah, they the numbers are almost all equal all.
It was just crazily and the date too, because it happened like around the same time of year or the same day or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was there as well. Yeah, I mean just an incredible amount of quote unquote coincidences. Which I mean, if you've listened to my show any amount of time, you know that I am not a subscriber to the belief of coincidences. There is no such thing. But yeah, so I didn't even think about that. Actually, that's pretty weird that there is kind of that same feel to it or correlation to it. There really are cycles of time. And if you pay attention to like different events that end up occurring, there's always a flavor to the events that occur, you know, like in these different cycles that end up occurring. But this is really, I mean, just a real definite hammer into that cyclical kind of thing as well.
Yeah, it's weird because it's a real world, you know, not a fiction, and then somehow it also comes true. This is an echo of two real events, and it's pretty bizarre. I mean, you can't really look at this and say, wow, there's not anything weird with this.
Yeah, exactly.
Both unfortunate, you know, both unfortunate circumstances, but yet at the same time, just, you know, it's kind of like, it's also like the Bermuda Triangle situation, you know, planes and ships go into this area, you know, you can't say there's not something strange with that going on as well. And
right.
This is the same thing, you know, 50 years from now, is the same situation going to happen again?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, because this would be, about 52 years apart, right? So
yeah, so like I said, in about 50 years, is there going to be another plane of some sort, you know, go over that same area and poof, it happens again? Is it like a slow progressing also Bermuda Triangle, just mountainy, not really a triangle either, but...
Well, we know that there are different ones of these triangles that are around the world. There's the one that's just off the coast of Japan, for instance, that I'm trying to remember exactly what it's called. I think it's the Devil's Triangle or something along those lines. You know, there was a study that was done a while back, and I cannot remember who actually came out with this theory with it. So the basics of it, though, is that they basically figured that there was a triangle set, you know, like the whole of Earth is basically in this kind of triangular shaped grid that you could look at and see that within each of these different triangle grids that are laid out across the world, there are these different kind of vortex kind of things that are there, like at the dead center of each of them. And like, for instance, the Bermuda Triangle and this Devil's Triangle, I believe that's what it's called, off the coast of Japan, all are kind of right there in the dead center of these triangles. So I wonder if there's one, you know, in this area as well then.
Sounds like it could be.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things that I ran across with this whole event is that the co-pilot apparently now it's been discerned that the co-pilot was the one who actually crashed the plane, and that for some reason he did it intentionally. The article that I ran across with this, I'll read it for you guys. It's The Mirror in the UK is now reporting that Germanwings co-pilot Andreas Lubitz suffered burnout or depression a few years ago, at least according to a former classmate. The reported behavior of Andreas Lubitz is eerily similar to SSRI drug-induced school shooters who have carried out mass murders in the United States. And in case after case, school shooters have been found to either be on prescription antidepressant drugs or have been recently taken off of them, causing withdrawal side effects. So this is interesting because this Germanwings co-pilot who intentionally crashed the plane actually was on these SSRI drugs for the depression and the burnout, basically. And is this basically kind of another case where that type of thing has gone bad, essentially? What's your take on that?
I'd say that's possible. I'd definitely say, you know, I mean, so he was the co-pilot, so that means, you know, there was another guy involved, obviously.
Yeah, he had locked the cockpit while the pilot was out of the cockpit, and the pilot could not get the door back open again to stop him from crashing the plane.
Yeah, so to me it sounds like the other guy pissed him off, and so he just was like, screw it, I've had enough.
That's a very big possibility. That I didn't think about that one either. Yeah, that really is definitely a possibility. But, you know, I wonder how much of it may have actually been pre-planned by him. You know, they're not going so far as to call this like a quote-unquote terrorist incident. And I wouldn't expect that it would be. Yeah, I know. I'm completely shocked about that myself, especially since it's very, you know, similar to the whole 9/11 crap and all that. You know, it really would not surprise me if they try to claim terrorist with it. But yeah, so at this point, basically, my suspicion is that it is definitely something that's related to these SSRIs, because one thing that is with these drugs is the side effect of suicidal thoughts. And a lot of people do kill themselves while being on these SSRIs, including, for instance, Robin Williams.
Exactly. Yeah, it's people, they don't work.
Yeah, they're disgusting.
Yeah, it's they defeat the purpose of what they're trying to serve.
Yeah, exactly. You would think, you know, if this is supposed to be an antidepressant, it would do something to stop depression. But they don't. I mean, people actually are more depressed on these drugs, especially, I mean, really any antidepressant drug that's out there, unless it's one that actually gives you that endorphin high kind of feeling. Almost all of them that I've run across are essentially useless when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's like I've seen how my own mom was on them and just...
Yeah, your mom was bad with it. Just, you know, as a great example, she would be, I mean, just abusive, disgusting, depressive, and oh man, it was a bad experience.
She had a bad day. She made sure it was my fault.
Yeah, exactly. And yet this was, you know, somebody that was on these drugs basically to counteract this type of thing. And she was worse on them. Once she got on them, she actually became dramatically worse.
Yeah, it's just they don't serve any good purpose.
No, they really don't. It's sad to say, because a lot of people do use them to try to, you know, better themselves. They're trying to get out of this state that they're in to try to better themselves, and I commend them for that. But to know that then they're actually going to end up potentially being worse because of it. I mean, it's just another example of how the medical industry does everything that it can do to actually cause harm so that people can get on even more drugs. I mean, they have side effect medications for the side effects of these different drugs.
Oh yeah, no kidding. And it's like obviously they work somewhat, or else these, I would hope people would just stop taking if it doesn't work at all. But I would believe that in any way that they would work, it would be more of a placebo effect. You know, oh yeah, this is helping me. You know, you perceive it as helping, you know, and it's not really helping.
Yeah, it's like giving a guy a Tic Tac, telling him it's just like aspirin, basically, and it's going to cure his headache, and his headache is going to be cured most likely because of that placebo effect. We actually talked about that on the show. Let me see. I think it might have been either Monday or Wednesday. I can't remember for sure. But yeah, that placebo effect is definitely a powerful thing, you know, and it shows how powerful our minds really are, you know?
Well, it's like too, you know, when I was still living with my mom, she tried to get me on, I don't remember at this point what it was, but she tried to get me on something because she took me to her happy pill doctor. And he told her that I had social anxiety disorder. No, I'm shy, but not social anxiety.
Yeah, if you had social anxiety disorder, you wouldn't be on this show right now.
If I had social anxiety disorder, I wouldn't have told him all the reasons why I felt me and Herb's relationship was falling apart. And so he tried to put me on some sort of pills, which I did not take any of them. And it's funny because, you know, later on, like the next time I saw him, my mom gave me the option, do you want to keep taking them or not? Well, I'm not really taking them, but you don't know that, so no. And it's funny because I found out later, she's like, yeah, you really did. I did see an improvement when you were taking them. And it's like, it's so funny because I didn't even take a single pill.
Yeah, so it's like the placebo effect was actually working on her.
Yeah, she perceived that there was a difference in me. She perceived that things were going better, and yet I never took a single pill. I kept throwing them away.
Yeah, and so again, I mean, it's the fact that a lot of the times these different medications that are out there, they really are doing absolutely nothing. You know, the chemistry of them doesn't really do anything for the body other than maybe do more damage overall. And I wonder how much of the healing that is done with a lot of the meds that are out there are actually done because of the placebo effect.
Yeah, just how you perceive it.
They tell you it's going to work, so it works.
Exactly.
It's craziness. I mean, it's just like with the CDC coming out and saying that the vaccines are 18% effective, and that is a success, you know? Like the flu vaccines this year. Do you remember me telling you about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, I mean, the CDC just a couple of weeks ago, basically, they came out and said the flu vaccine this year is 18% effective and only 15% effective on the actual ones that it really matters to, which are those under 2 years old. So, and this success rate, they say that even with this 18%, it's better than 0%. So everybody still should go out and get the vaccine.
Yeah, which I could put it I could put it this way, you know, we homeschool the kids. Oh, the kids got 18% of a grade instead of, you know, 100. Oh, yeah, they got a passing grade. Good job. They get a certificate.
Yeah, no. We're going to give them an award for 18%.
Yeah, 18% because on their tests that they give them, you know, they get 15% on most of them, you know, so their overall grade is like 18%. You know, no, that's not passing. That's shame on you.
That's shame on you. Yes, exactly.
That doesn't fly.
And that's exactly what we should be saying to the CDC. Shame on you. This is ridiculous. Why do you think that this is a success? That is such complete and utter BS. Just my opinion, maybe, I guess. But anyways, so the next bit of news that I had for you guys is one that I've kind of talked about a little bit. We talked about it a little bit. Let me see. I think it was last week on The Last Frequency. No. Wait, I'm sorry. It was Tuesday on Michael Vera's Late Night in the Midlands show. I was on as a guest on that show. And one thing that we had spoken about was this new operation that the military is doing this year, starting in June. If I remember correctly, they're doing a new set of drills, basically, in the Southwest. It's going to cover, if I remember correctly, 7 states. The operation is called Operation Jade Helm 15. And the things that are going to be going on in this operation are actually very, very disturbing. But I ran across an article that I wanted to bring you guys. Now, I have not validated this completely. There's a video that's attached to this article, and I recommend going and watching it for yourselves and coming to kind of a decision about what it could mean or what it signifies yourselves. As I always advocate, do your own research and do your due diligence. But I wanted to at least make you guys aware that this is out there, and I will have a link for this in the show notes for this show. Which, by the way, you can find at openeyesnetwork.com/OE088. But let me read a little bit of the article to you guys so you guys can get an idea of what's contained in it and basically what is going to be going on with this whole Jade Helm thing. So this is a direct quote from the article. As I was working on a report concerning the existence of nationwide rendition centers known as black sites, I was, by the way, I covered that on a previous show as well. Those black sites are essentially where people can be arrested, charged with no crime, and basically detained for as long as the law enforcement would like to detain them without any charges, essentially. And it's under the anti-terrorism type of purview, basically. Anyways, I was sent a video from multiple people made by Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton. They were filming black helicopters in Texas. This video validates many reports that I am receiving about preemptive arrests of dissidents notated as enemy combatants in preparation for Jade Helm 15, and this is what I believe the two reporters are witnessing. Dissident extractions consist of personnel in armored vehicles. This actually right here is part of the activities that are going to be going on with Jade Helm. So this, in this section right here, this is basically quotes from documentation regarding Jade Helm 15. Dissident extractions consist of personnel in armored vehicles descending upon a home of a known dissident. The known dissident and the family are SWAT teamed and arrested. The dissident is then transported to a waiting helicopter where they and other similarly collected dissidents are transported to where ground transportation will be used to move the captives to a black site re-education facility. This protocol is for the main target only. The planned fate of dissident family members is something that I have not been able to determine. So, Jade Helm 15 is supposed to commence starting July 15th. So I was wrong, not June. July 15th, as has been announced by military personnel. Jade Helm 15 seems to be happening right now. And not only in the American Southwest, but there are reports also that this type of thing is being conducted in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida. Now, I want to get your take on this, Jolene, and see what you think of this so far.
Well, first off, there's definitely a number thing going on. 1515, Jade Helm 15. And I like the name of it, Jade Helm.
It's a very Chinese. Jaded, very Chinese, you know?
It's a very jaded story to begin with. And in a way, it's making me think of a lot of, like, the different it's making me think of a lot of things, I guess, but it's just, depending on what is confirmed and what is going on further, it's definitely not good.
No, it's not. The whole idea of the FEMA camps and these black rendition sites and all of that kind of stuff, you know, it's very disturbing. There's no reason for this stuff to even exist, period, let alone to actually be starting to get implemented like this, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, correct me if I'm wrong, they pretty much, black helicopters come, they pick up people that are, shame on you, you're not who we want you to be.
Right, you're not following the rules, basically, yeah.
Yeah, it's I can think of it, I can compare it to quite a few different, what is it, young author books that I've been reading of late, you know, that are like the big ones coming out, you know, like Hunger Games, yes,
Hunger Games,
and Dauntless.
Maybe like Divergent and that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that sort of thing, you know, I mean, it's like with the Hunger Games, there's the whole, you know, tribute and you'll be taken away and you fight for your lives, but not necessarily that part, but the whole, they get taken away and you can't really say boo about it, you know, and...
Yeah, you know, you may be onto something with that. That I've said before that a lot of times what I see happening in the world is this type of consensus reality where people are basically creating the reality that we're living in. In fact, I spoke about that last week, if I remember correctly. But what could be happening with all of this is, since these different books and stories have become so vastly popular, especially among the young population who have more of a tie, basically, or more of a closeness to their psychic natures, you know, so to speak. It could be that they're actually putting forward energy into creating a reality that sort of coincides with what is in a lot of these different books.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that, because I mean, it's like you can see it. I mean, you can look at Ferguson. Obviously, there's been more influence on that in other ways too. But what I'm saying is, they were quick to try and burn it down. They were quick to destroy the city more than it really needed to be. And, well, they didn't need to do it to begin with, but you know what I mean? they were quick to try and burn the city down. And, you know, that kind of mentality is tied to all these different books that are coming out, the different books, the different movies, you know. Oh, we're living in a falling down society, and through the ashes we'll create the new society. You know, it's the phoenix all over again, and just everything else. So we're creating this happening. So yes, the younger generation is doing it, and the generation that's happening now is starting to do that. And yes, movies and books and whatnot is making it seem appealing. You know, I mean, you see how big Hunger Games is, and Dauntless, whatever, Divergent is the series. Divergent, you know, they already have a movie of that one. They have 3 books of that one, too. That series has been getting buzz, and there's...
Yeah, those are both hugely popular books, like I said, especially among the younger generation, you know?
Yeah, and just think about it. Think about... imagine these books coming out when, like, say, you were younger. Would they have made this big of a deal?
No, I don't think they would have. I mean,
we've been more prepped, you know. Yeah. I mean, I'm younger than you. My generation's been more prepped to, this is more tantalizing. This is more interesting. This is more, oh, yeah. Because we can see that change needs to happen. And unfortunately, a lot of us only see that the change has to happen by something falling down instead of we can work with what we got.
Right. And build up from what you've got in place right now. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Phoenix. You mentioned the Phoenix, and what just popped into my mind, and it may just be because I did an episode about it on Monday, but I talked about mind control. And one of the mind control programs that is very well known about is the Project Montauk, which goes into basically changing the social structure. If you read the data that's been released about the Montauk Project, it's about mass mind control, and it's about changing people from a base level, essentially, like changing how they would act and react in different situations. Well, one of the interesting things there that you just kind of cued me with is the name of the project, Project Montauk, is not Project Montauk, it's actually the Phoenix 2 project.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if there might be some kind of actual correlation to that, you know, that there might be a Phoenix 3 program that's out there that is actually being involved in causing this kind of social change to occur through some form of mind control, essentially.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say that too, because like, If that is the case, then I would guess that Hunger Games is like them almost spitting it in your face. Ha ha, you can't even guess it. Not saying that the person who wrote the book has anything to do with it, but her books wouldn't have gotten so big if it didn't get the attention that it did. Because, you know, she wrote them on Amazon to begin with.
Right. Yeah, they started off as ebooks, and they got just hugely popular from there.
Yeah, they just got ridiculously big. And what I'm saying with the whole, you know, if so, then her books could be used to as a spit in the face, because the whole the books are called The Hunger Games, but what is the symbol? Do you know what the symbol is?
I cannot remember right offhand. I know it's a circle, but you know my eyesight. So.
Okay, well, it's a circle. And it's actually, if I remember right, in the book it's called a Jabberjay. It's a mockingbird. It's a mockingbird, okay. And in the books, there's a deformed, genetically mutated version.
Genetically modified.
Yeah, so that the birds can talk and torment people. But anyways, it's a mockingbird pen, and it has a huge deal with the whole books. In the first one, it's in the first book, the cover, the original cover, you know, just has just the pen, and then the next one, which I don't, Catching Fire, again, right in your face. The second book's called Catching Fire.
Right, and I know the third one is called Mockingjay.
Mockingjay. Now, the third one, it's of peace. It's of white. It's white and blue color, so it's the calming. The first one is black and orange. The orange for the pendant, the black in the background.
Which means to take action.
And then the second one is all red. It's
and that
red.
One is definite action.
And the pendant itself is on fire. Now, if you look at the trailers to the movies, if I remember all of them, maybe not the first one, but all of them have the thing on fire, the actual pendant on fire, which is not the case on the books, you know.
Which, again, is a definite phoenix symbol. You have a bird that's on fire and out of the ashes of the dead phoenix, which burns itself up every 500 years and rebirths itself out of its own ashes.
Exactly. And spoiler alert, if you want to read the books and haven't yet, close your ears for the next few seconds. But a thing, too, that kind of correlates with this, too, is in the second book, you know, she goes to the Hunger Games arena and she has to go back a second time in the second book. The way she escapes is with, she uses electricity and a bow and arrow, and she shoots it at the dome, which is just a big, huge force field, hollow projected thing. And shooting this fire bolt into the sky burns it all down, and it comes crashing down, and she gets rescued out of that.
Hmm.
So again, coming out of the ashes, she's coming out of fire, using the fire to burn it all down.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
also her district is coal, which makes fire.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, there's you should read the book, honey. I mean, I keep telling you got to read
it. Yeah, I know I should.
It's very...
Well, there's a lot of symbolism just in what you're saying right
just
there. There's
in
a lot
that
of,
book.
There's a whole lot of esoteric symbolism that goes on with that. I know as far as symbolic things are concerned, this one thing that is very well known about the Power Elite is that a lot of the things that they do, kind of their big laugh in your face kind of thing, is before they do any actions, they reveal what their actions are. They have to tell people, and this is sort of their rules of the game, essentially, is what it comes down to. They're, according to their rules that they're following, they have to inform their victims of what they're going to be doing before they do it. Now, the loophole to that is that they'll do it through, like, doing things in movies or television shows or in different, you know, different media like books and that sort of thing. Or you might see, a great example would be soldiers, you know, in the military who are getting sent off to go fight in a war. They wear their patches. Those patches have all these different occultic symbols that are on them. And essentially what they're doing is the military personnel that are wearing these things, they are, whether they realize it or not, they are giving themselves as a sacrifice. They're offering themselves as a sacrifice to whatever their bosses basically are following. So if they're following I hate to use the words, but a satanic or a Luciferian kind of an agenda, and they feel that they are sacrificing these lives to Satan or whatever, then the soldiers may not be in the realization that this is what's going on, but that doesn't matter. They're still wearing the symbols and therefore are being a quote-unquote willing sacrifice for whatever they're going to do. So if they go out and they get killed, then that death was a blood sacrifice as a sacrament to whatever their bosses are following. And if they kill somebody while they're wearing this, then it's just the same. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So what do you think about all of that?
Well, definitely. I definitely agree with what you're saying. You know, I definitely you know, it definitely ties in, you know. I mean, you can see that there's themes of things going on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just it's an interesting, I like I said, I don't know for sure if this is the reality of the situation, if this is what was intended with something like the Hunger Games, or even if this whole mind control thing is a thing. But one way or the other, we do see that all of this stuff is happening. And maybe it's something that people should look into and research more, because this there might be something to this and people just don't realize it. This might be like the subtle or subconscious thing that is going on, that's kind of being pushed forward as an agenda.
Yeah, definitely. And for it to be apparent in like movies and books, it's just conditioning us to be okay with it and to subconsciously understand, yes, this is happening.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, guys, we're way into this already and didn't even realize it. So we had a little bit more news for you guys, but we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go ahead and get into the subject of autism and kind of how it relates to us on a personal level, and kind of go into things from there. I think you guys are going to have an interesting time listening to it. So stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Ben Franklin said, "If you do the same thing tomorrow as you did today, you're going to get the same tomorrow as you got today." Changing the world starts with you, and changing you starts with changing the way you think. Late Night in the Midlands can help. Listen to all of our shows at latenightinthemidlands.com, because things really do need to change.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information, and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
TROLLS. This is a terrible new disorder being diagnosed every day. Victims of this disease have been found in psychologists, scientists, doctors, other people with letters and numbers behind their names, and anyone else who is in the world specifically to cause trouble. It stands for Totalitarian Regime Orchestrating Laughable Liar Syndrome, and is a terrible burden on anyone around those that have been diagnosed with this disease. Symptoms may include debunking all truths, diversion tactics, divisive talk, and flame war baiting, COINTELPRO tactics and maneuvers, and making rude and obnoxious comments, even where such things are not warranted. You can help cure the problem by opening your eyes to the facts, speaking about this disorder to anyone you know, and not allowing their disease to influence your life. If you or someone you know has been diagnosed with TROLLS, please seek immediate assistance by going to latenightinthemidlands.com and listening to all of the shows that are available. Only you can prevent TROLLS. This message brought to you by IRA, the Independently Reporting Association. Thank you for your support.
At The Secret Teachings, we are not a part of any group, label, and we do not attempt to fearmonger. Some of the topics we discuss may seem scary, so I advise you not to be afraid, but to be informed as we discuss current events and ancient history, astrotheology and symbolism, the paranormal and the occult, the esoteric, health, and much more. I am not here to tell you that what I say is truth, but to allow you to decide for yourself based on the evidence presented and the dots connected. Information is not negative. It is how you view it that determines the dimensional characteristics of either dual aspect of negativity or positivity. Try as you might, but no amount of disinformation, propaganda, rhetoric, or trolling will change the truth. The truth is the truth, regardless if the mass is accepted as is, or if it is accepted by only one out of billions. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. For more information on airtimes and free downloads of past episodes of The Secret Teachings, you can visit www.thesecretteachings.info. That's thesecretteachings.info.
Hello there, and welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira, and tonight I have a special guest with me. This is somebody that I love and adore, and always have and always will, my wife Jolene Robinson. Hello, Jolene.
Why, hello again.
So tonight we have kind of been talking about a few different subjects, like at random with the news, but we kind of hit into some places that I didn't expect to go, but I really enjoyed actually, and I hope that you guys out there did as well. You know, while we were doing that little commercial break there, we were talking a little bit about the other symbolism that's involved in things like the Hunger Games and all of that. It definitely makes me want to read the books and watch the movies. I'll be honest, I have yet to, and I definitely have wanted to, just never have, you know, had the time to do it with everything else that I've had going on. But, you know, it definitely makes me want to. We were talking about some of the symbolism that's there, like Well, you said there was like 13 different houses that were there originally, but the, one of them got destroyed, so now there's 12.
Yeah, there's 13.
Falls
districts.
Right into the Zodiac, you know, and with the missing 13th and everything with the Ophiuchus and on and on and on. It, very interesting stuff. I wonder how much the person that wrote that book, or you know, that series actually had involved with you know, knowledge-wise with the things that she was writing, or you know, she just kind of did it by accident with stream of consciousness-ing, you know. You shush, woman. Anyway, so hello again and welcome back. So we wanted to talk to you guys about the subject of autism. Now, autism is a subject that's, I guess you could say, near and not very dear to our hearts, but it's something that we have a lot of experience with because of our son, whose name is Seth. For those of you who may not have heard on the show before, which I have talked somewhat about our story before, but he's 13 years old at this point, and when he was about 2.5 years old, he had an experience of things. Now, we kind of wanted to bring this to you guys because it is a very important topic, I think, especially considering that autism is now becoming such a prevalent thing. It is such an insidious thing that is occurring, especially here in America, but worldwide as well.
It's unfortunately becoming more common.
Yes. Basically, at this point in time, the numbers, at least according to the CDC, which we don't know if we can exactly trust their numbers or what, but at this point in time, at least the numbers that have been released, they go back to 2013 at this point, or, you know, go up to 2013 at this point. And the numbers are essentially 1 in 50 people at this point in time are autistic. That is a pretty dramatic number, considering that in 2012, that number was 1 in 88. If you go back even further, you know, you get to around the year 2000 or so, and the rate was like 1 in 1,000-ish. So you can see that there's a definite rise in it. And at this point, they're estimating that if the rise continues the way that it is, by the year 2020, the numbers are going to be more like 1 in 2 will be autistic, or at least on the autism scale. Now, the thing to bear in mind when it comes to autism, and we'll just kind of get this out of the way real fast, when it comes to autism, autism is a scale. It is an umbrella term, and there are many different disorders that are under this autism label. It's called a PDD, a pervasive, what's the word? Something disorder.
I don't know.
Anyways, you get the idea. But so it's a label that gets placed on a lot of different disorders. Now, for our son Seth, his autism is considered to be childhood disintegrative disorder, and that is one of the rare types of autism. Not many autistic kids have it, and it is a very hard one to deal with. So we thought that we would get into the story of Seth and the things that we've experienced with him on a personal basis, and then get into kind of more of a generalized topic with the autism in general. We do have, for those of you who are interested in it, we do have another show that we do. It's called Adventures in Autism. Now, we have not published any of the episodes yet. They will be very soon. We're expecting to do the first publications within the next 2 weeks. But on the show, essentially, we spend about a half hour speaking about different subjects that are autism related. So in one episode, we'll talk about schooling and how it in specific deals with autism, you know, some of the pros and cons with it, some of the difficulties that we've encountered with it. And we also talk about things that you can do that we've found to help out with Seth that you might be able to try with your kids or with grandkids or whatever. Because, I mean, autism is now becoming so prevalent that every family essentially has been impacted by it in some way, whether it's their own family members that are that way or somebody that they know.
Exactly.
So do you have anything that you want to add real quick before we start in with his story, or?
No, not really. Ready for us to just get into it.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead and start, or?
You can.
Okay. So here's the deal. So we'll be kind of forthcoming here with things and say that Jolene is not his actual biological mother.
Nor Crystal.
Nor Crystal as well, our other child who is 11 years old as of yesterday, actually. So happy birthday, Crystal. Anyways,
happy belated birthday.
Belated birthday. Basically, though, Jolene has been involved in the kids' lives all of their lives, at least in one way, shape, or form. She's at least known them their whole lives. So she has basically been right there with everything that has gone on. And at this point, she's mom to the kids. The actual biological mother basically abandoned these kids, and I've been raising them, you know, myself, and now with her help as well, of course, but yeah, but for a period of time there, it was just me that was doing it. Now, so I wanted to be forthcoming with that so that there's no confusion with things, you know, in the story. But essentially, up until about the time that he was 2.5 years old, Seth was very normal. He was actually ahead of the curve in a lot of the things that he was doing. So he learned to walk early. He learned to talk early. He was counting. He was reading. Potty trained. He was doing everything. He was very much, you know, kind of ahead of the average, you could say. Now, not like exceptional, but, you know, we're not going to fool ourselves with things, you know. Do the every parent thing, right? But essentially, yes, he was at least above average in almost all of the different categories. Now, when he was 2.5, he got his routine MMR vaccine. Now, for those of you who have listened to my show before, you know how I am in relation to the topic of vaccines. It is my passion point because of Seth. After he got the MMR, he got very sick. Very, very sick. He ended up spiking up a temperature. He was vomiting on and on and on. The whole nine yards. Very, very sick little boy. So we took him to the hospital because we were very worried about his fever. And we just could not do anything to bring it down. We got to the hospital, and in the emergency room, they did the examination of him, and they decided to do what they could do to get his fever to break. So they attempted to give him children's Tylenol there at the emergency room. So they brought out this big syringe of fluid, and they basically had us as well as nursing staff hold him down. We had to pin him on his back, and nurses were basically on his legs, on his arms, everything. We had to do what we could to keep him still because he was fighting getting this medication so hard. He hated taking medicine. So they brought this syringe over, and they squirted it. I mean, it was just this huge vial of it. They squirted it into his mouth, and he ended up aspirating it and gagged in a big way, threw up everywhere. And, you know, the Tylenol was all over him and everything. But he, like I said, he ended up aspirating probably a fair amount of it, we think. Immediately afterwards, they brought out another syringe and gave him another dose. So we don't know how much of that first dose he got. We don't know exactly how much of that second dose he got. On and on and on. Okay, so that brought the fever down. But, and basically they sent us home. You know, once they realized that his fever was down, they said, well, you guys can go ahead and go home. They never said what was exactly wrong with him. They just basically attributed it to, like, the flu or something. Which we were confused about because of the timing with the vaccination that he had had. This was just, you know, a matter of a couple of days after the vaccination had been given. So basically, after that point in time, he started to lose everything. All of the things that he had learned to that point, he began to lose. It started with him telling me that he was confused in the head. And I kind of wrote it off. You know, I didn't really think anything of it because I just figured, you know, this is just a you know, near 3-year-old that, you know, was just kind of talking, right? So he started off talking about this confusion in his head. And then at the next stage, basically, he started saying things like, there are bugs in my head. I can't think straight. I can't think. I can't see very well. Things are blurry. And very quickly, it progressed from there. Things rapidly changed from that point. And within a matter of essentially 2 months from that, he was essentially an infant again. He had lost his potty training, lost his ability to speak, could not manipulate small objects, was not looking us in the eyes, on and on and on. Basically, every kind of classic symptom of autism was there. So, do you have anything that you want to add to all of that, hun? Or
yeah, I can add. Yeah,
okay, go for it.
So he pretty much, yeah. I didn't live with Ira at the time. You know, he was still with the kids' previous, you know, the kids' real mom. And, but I, as an outsider, I got to see a lot of this. You know, I did see Seth. I didn't see Seth often before the autism happened, but I saw him while he was sick. I saw him, I think, before you guys took him to the ER.
Yeah, you were there, before, like, right before his fever started spiking up in a big way. He was going, you know, starting into the sickness, but not, full blown. And going to the emergency room like he did.
Yeah, and then I saw him afterwards, and I remember how he would just kind of mumble, you know, mommy or daddy or whatever. And soon enough, it came to the point that he wouldn't talk anymore, and I remember seeing that. And I was confused because, you know, I couldn't understand what was going on. You know, I thought it was, like, just a weird phase he was going through at first. Because, you know, I didn't have any children at the, you know. And I was quite young at the time, too. So I'm like, is this just a weird phase he's going through? So it was weird for me. But I remember, yeah, he just went through, he just didn't talk very much. And he would grunt quite often. Seemed more distant. You know, obviously seemed more distant. The things that I had once seen him interested in and actively playing with and understanding how they work, lost interest in them and was more interested in, like, the more simplistic things. So, yeah, and I remember, you know, I'd come over and I'd try to help him count, you know. He had that little farmhouse with the little animals, and I tried to help him count. And at this point, he'd be a little bit older than 2.5. But you know, trying to help him count, and he would mumble the words, but he would try. But
right,
I
and,
mean,
and previous to that, he had interacted with you in a big way with that even particular toy.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, it was...
You were his chichi, you know, you were his chicky. That was Jolene's nickname, you know. She, that was what the kids always called her. And he wouldn't even call you that anymore. I mean, he got to the point where he just really didn't even say much of anything at all, you know.
Well, it was funny, too, because before this happened, he was able to say my name, Jolene, pretty decently. I mean, as you can expect for a two-ish-year-old kid. But then after this, my name was pretty much impossible for him. So that's why I gave Chicky, because Chicky, you know, Chicky was a nickname that I've had with my family forever. I don't even know where I got it from. But that is easier to say than Jolene. That's kind of a harder name, Jolene, whereas Chicky or Chick, or as he called me a lot, was Chi-Chi, you know, or Chi. So for years, I was just Chi or Chi-Chi.
Yep, exactly. So basically what we ended up having to do was build him back up from the infant again.
And it's taken a long time.
Yes, it has. When we got the diagnosis of autism with him, basically what they ended up figuring out was that the specific type of autism that he had was, like I said before, called childhood disintegrative disorder. And the type of autism that is, basically when he learns anything, if he's not having it continually reinforced, like almost on a daily basis, in fact, he'll lose it. It just is lost somewhere in his mind. There's not a connection that's being made to the memories and that sort of thing. And essentially, like how we were told his brain worked was that it's sort of like looking through a scrapbook. With most people and most children, when they are looking through their memories in their mind, it's like looking at a movie. You see a movie playing on a screen, for instance, and you know, not literally, but that this is sort of how it acts. You know, you'll have a memory that goes from point A to point B to point C, and a story is taking place within that A, B, and C. With him, it's much more like a scrapbook, like you picked out a scrapbook from a bookshelf of a family that you never knew, and you're looking through the book and you're seeing all of the different things that are in the book, and you're not able to associate any type of memories with the pictures that you see or with the scraps that are there, you know, like the little awards and all of that kind of stuff. There's no real memory that's being attributed to it. So that's how his memory works. And that's the difficulty that we have with him, because if we don't continually reinforce things with him, if we don't continually talk about things or remind him about things and that sort of thing, he'll forget it, even sometimes within just a matter of days, even at this point at 13 years old.
Yeah, definitely. One example, like as a current one, is one of his favorite things to read, for example. He loves to read, and one of his favorite things to read is a book series called American Chillers from Jonathan Rand. And he loves the book series. He's got, like, the first 20 in order. And last year, he had asked me if when I go to work, if I wanted to read some of the books. And I was like, sure, yeah. I figured it'd be, you know, a cute little thing for me to come home and be like, oh, yeah, I read this book and this part was my favorite thing. Because that's kind of what we do. You know, we watch a movie. What's your favorite part? We play a game together. What was your favorite part? So at the time he had, I think, just the first 1 through 10. And I read them all. You know, I took them to work. When I'm not busy, I'm allowed to read. So I took them to work and I read them. And just recently, I want to say like a week ago, maybe two, I was tucking him into bed and he says, hey, mommy, "Would you like to read any of my American Schiller books anytime?" He says, "They're really great." And I says, "Well, I've read some of them before, so I can read where I left off at." He says, "No, you haven't." I says, "Yeah, I read them." He says, "When?" I says, "Remember, you let me read them. You let me take one to work, and I'd read it at work, and I came home and I told you what I liked." And he says, "That never happened." I says, "Yeah, that happened like last year." And he says, "No, I never had you read the books." So even then, something that was so special to him and something so recent as being last year, he can't even remember that happening. Again, his books that he cherishes and they have to be in a special box and all this and that, they're special to him. He can't even remember that he let me read them and we had deep conversations about the books and, oh, they're so wonderful, and yet he can't remember. He can't comprehend. He can't remember. He can't get a grasp on the idea that I've already read them.
Right, exactly. So that really is a perfect example of it, because it is something that is, you know, really, like you said, special to him. So even the special things are swiftly forgotten. You could almost say that with his specific type of autism, it is kind of akin to Alzheimer's, where the people, they don't have any association with any memories, and a lot of the memories are just gone.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I mean, it's you can also akin it to the fact that it's just short-term memory, you know, very short-term memory. There's no long-term memory, and it's just, it's a sad situation. I mean, it's, you see how it is, and I mean, it's like, sometimes with school, he'll complain about one thing, and it's like, "Don't you remember we did that, you know, a month ago?" And "What? I didn't do this." And I show him the paper, and, you know, well, I mean, just this week, spelling, remember, just this week, spelling. Yeah. We do spelling on Tuesdays, and then they do a retake on Friday if they need it. And Tuesday was when Ira had his ER thing, so I came home, I did the rest of schoolwork with the kids, and I totally forgot to do spelling with my son. I did it with my daughter, but I totally forgot to do it with my son. And so come Wednesday, he's asking about something, and I'm saying, "Well, we got to get spelling done first." And he says, "Well, no, I already did that." I says, "No, remember the whole daddy having to go to the hospital? I totally forgot. And when I was tucking you in last night, I told you that we need to do it tomorrow." And he says, "No, I did it last night. I did it yesterday." And he couldn't even remember the fact that he hadn't even done it yet. He was convinced that he had already done it because every Tuesday I do spelling, you know, so.
Right. He remembered the association of Tuesdays being spelling because that's something that is constantly reinforced,
yes,
with him. But the fact that you didn't do it, I mean, it just completely, you know, he's got that routine that spelling is done on Tuesdays. So since Tuesday passed, he must have done spelling.
Exactly. Even though when I tucked him in, when I told him, "Oh, you know what? We forgot. We didn't do spelling." He smacked his head. He's like, you know, "Oh, man, how did we forget?" You know, we had a laugh about it. And then the very next morning, you know, "No, I did it." And I'm like, "Yeah, don't you remember? We were talking about it last night." So he couldn't even remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it really is. It's a hard situation that we're going through with him. I mean, it's heartbreaking to us because we see the potential that's there in him. You know, you can look into his eyes and you can see that bright intelligence that's there. He is smart. He is so super smart, but he is so disconnected that it just does not come through. And it really is, to me, well, you know, I mean, those of you who have listened to my show again before know that I'm very empathic, and I connect with him at a really base level. You know, I mean, just I can connect right up to everything that he's going through, and I can look through his eyes and see the world basically through his eyes, and all of the swirling confusion that is there 24/7. It's really, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard on us as well. I mean, we won't deny that it's difficult for us as parents to have a child that is going through this. But, you know, I mean, he's our little guy. He's our Seth, and we would not have him any other way. You know, this is who he is. This is who he's going to be. So this is Seth, you know? And so we don't regret anything that's going on with him. If things could be different, yes, we would definitely rather have him be normal, but if that's not a possibility, we're still happy with who and what he is.
We'll take him exactly as he is. Yeah.
Right. No strings attached, you know? So, we'll get that part clear, but we know it's hard on him as well, because there are times that he'll talk about the things that are going on in his mind. And sometimes what he'll say, things like, there's things that are in my mind and I can't get them out. There's something that's there and I can't get to it. I don't know what it is and I can't get to it. And he talks about things like that a lot.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it really makes me wonder what it is that's there that he's trying to get out. If he's trying to get, you know, to that core of who he is supposed to be, but was prevented from being, you know, I mean, I suspect that it's something along those lines, because every time that he does it, he always has this feeling with it. And he'll say things like, I know something is not right. I know I'm not supposed to be this way. What's wrong with me? And when your child looks at you and says, what is wrong with me? Why am I this way? How do you answer that question?
Yeah, it's, you know, he'll say things like that, or what's wrong with my head? Why is my head not working like it should? And my brain won't think right. And
yeah, exactly. And so, like I said, I mean, we know that he knows something is up, and that I think that's actually what makes it harder on me, because if he didn't realize it, at least he'd be kind of that ignorance is bliss kind of thing.
Yeah, he'd be more content with being himself, whereas how he is, he comprehends that there's something off, and it confuses and frustrates him just as much as it does us.
Yes, exactly. So I know that there are a lot of people that are out there that are dealing with children that have autism. And I guess, like I said, I wanted to come out with this story of ours tonight so that you guys can know you're not alone. You know, you're not alone in what you're going through. And maybe by us kind of telling the story and basically, I mean, we've got him improved to the point that he is functional, you know, that he can function when he's not being frustrated enough to not want to function, basically. But, you know, that's all part and parcel of it. But there's always hope. And there's always, I guess you could say, there's always a reason for everything that goes on. That's something that I fully believe in, that everything happens for a reason. And that includes if a child that you have had has something that's going wrong with them, there is a reason for it. It's just a matter of finding what that reason is. And I think a lot of times it's as a lesson, you know? I mean, I think that's the main reason, not for the child, but for yourself. Like, for example, with us, I know for me, and I'm not exactly sure about Jolene here, but I know for me, this has been a deep lesson on how to be humble, you know, how to be grateful for how your child is, no matter how they are. So many parents out there, and hopefully none of my listeners are this way, but so many parents that are out there put so much pressure on their kids to be perfect, put so much pressure on their kids to do this or to do that and to be who they want them to be. But then you have this child who's like Seth, that you have to accept at face value no matter what, you know, and that is a real big lesson to have learned.
Yeah, big time.
So, Jolene, do you have any comments that you want to add to all of this?
I could add a bunch, really, but
we'll go for it. We have plenty of time. So,
okay. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, he's gone through a lot. I mean, it was quite a few years. He didn't really speak, like, hardly anything. I mean, his vocabulary was very low for a very long time, and he just mumbled, you know, day was daddy, you know, day, gamma for grandma. When Crystal was born, it was Cree. If he wanted something to drink, it was usually Jew for juice, and more for either milk or more food. You know, I mean, his vocabulary was low. He made up words, and before he could even say that, I mean, there was a time period where, we're not kidding, there was a time period where he could not speak at all.
Yeah, where literally if he needed something, all he could do was point to it, and yeah, we had to try to figure things out from there.
He'd point and, you know, kind of grunt, and it slowly progressed from there, and for a long time, he could hardly say anything. I mean, I remember, you know, the whole moon pie situation. I don't know if you want to say it or I can say it.
Go ahead.
Okay, there was the... For a long time, he would go around the house pointing to the cupboards going, what was it, Oompa?
Yeah, Oompa.
Oompa. And I remember I'd been over at your house before and he did that. He'd point to the cupboards, Oompa, and open the drawers, drag out things, you know, is this what you want? Is this what you want? No. And he wouldn't say no, but he'd shake his head or he'd, you know, start grumping and stomping his feet and having a temper tantrum because we don't know what the heck he's saying. And I was talking to you over the computers, you know, through a webcam. And I remember he came over to you and all of a sudden you just started crying and asked you what was up. And you told me, you know, I finally found out what Oompa was. He came over, you were eating a moon pie, and he was pointing to the moon pie and goes, Oompa, Oompa. And you just started crying because finally broke through what Oompa was, you know.
Yeah, I remember that very distinctly. It was definitely a sad moment, but also a breakthrough moment, I guess you could say. I mean, that
happened way at the beginning of him finally starting to voice anything.
Yeah,
that was like one of his first quote unquote words being able to speak again.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And it was definitely a moment of well, like I said, sadness, because he had been talking so distinctly before, and yet now we were happy, you know, that sort of bittersweet kind of thing, you know, being overjoyed with the fact that we figured out that Oompa was moon pie.
A snack.
You know.
A sugary snack.
Yeah, it's a bittersweet thing, because before all of this had happened, he could say moon pie, no problem. He could say all different kinds of things with no problem. He had a huge vocabulary. So, again, it was both joyous because we had figured it out, but also sad at the same time because he had been so far progressed before that. But again, we've got him now to the point where he does speak at least mostly clear. He's got a good vocabulary again at this point. And I guess that for me, it gives me hope that if we can continue down the path that we're going with him, he could progress even further, you know. But he's definitely progressed a lot further since we've gotten him homeschooled. When he was in the school situation, in the public school situation, he actually was at a plateau and was not progressing at all with it all. And then a couple of incidents ended up happening, and so we decided that it was time to remove him from public school and start him with our own homeschooling thing. And he's actually progressed quite a bit further because of that, you know, being able to be home and having all of the attention with it and everything focused.
And
you
not
know.
So stressed out.
And not stressed out. Right, exactly. Because he was so stressed on a constant basis.
Yeah, I mean, he would come home and literally start trying to pull out his hair because math was just, you know, they were expecting him to be both at par and yet not at par. And I would see his past work from the week, and you could see that an aide was helping him the entire time. And, of course, I'm not that aide, so me trying to help him is not the same way that the aide would help him, and it was just a confusing mess, but he can't do it on his own. You know, he couldn't comprehend on how to do these things on his own, and, you know, it was just a nightmare. I mean, he would get these worksheets, and the worksheet, it would say at the top, you know, make sure you do all five pages, you know, front and back, reading and circling A, B, C, or D. But at the bottom of, like, page two, it says stop, don't continue on. And that just confused him the most. You know, he would argue every time he got those kind of packets. It says stop. It says stop. I can't go on. Well, it says right here at the top of your paper, the teacher, you know, has written that you need to do all five pages. But it says right here, stop. You know, so it's a conflict. And, you know, I had a hassle with him for that. And now that he's homeschooled, I make sure there's no stop on anything.
We make the worksheets.
Yeah, I hand make all the worksheets. And By golly, if I differ on him, he lets me know. And this is not what I'm used to.
He's very much a stickler for being meticulous. Everything has to be exactly so, or things go wrong.
Yeah, like spelling has to be on Tuesdays.
Yes, exactly. Well, listen, guys, we need to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to go ahead and get maybe into a couple of other subjects that we wanted to hit. But I hope that you guys have gotten a lot out of our personal story when it comes to Seth, and maybe some hope for yourselves as well. You know, maybe if your child who is autistic has reached kind of a plateau, maybe look into doing homeschooling yourselves if you can, and see what you can do to kind of break through some of the barriers that go on. You know, it's just a matter of sometimes when it comes to these kids that have autism, we get into a rut with them because a lot of them do have this attitude of everything has to be exact all the time. And sometimes if you can throw a bit of chaos into there, you might find that things can have a bit of a breakthrough and you can maybe progress a couple of steps forward again. And if you can get anything out of our story, if you've learned like how that kind of thing can go on, then I'd be grateful, you know, and it'd be worth it, basically, to me. So do you have any other comments that you want to add to all of this, or?
Basically, just, you know, we will be making more shows, but under another guise, not Open Eyes, but by the Adventures in Autism. So we'll be making more of that. And like we say in the show, if there's anything you ever want to ask or comments or even a story you want to share, whether you want us to share it out loud again or just share it to us personally, you can write to us at feedback@openeyes.com. And we'll...
OpenEyesNetwork.com.
I'm sorry. I should know this. Yeah.
You made the website.
Exactly. That's why I should know. Yeah. feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. So, yeah, you can ask us any questions there. You can ask for, you know, whatever, and we can, we'll help you out in any way we can.
Yeah, and we're very open when it comes to our story because we feel that again, if anybody can get anything out of our story and be helped with their child as well, then everything that we've gone through has been worth it, you know? That's my feeling on it anyway.
Yeah, not to say that we've been perfect in everything, but, you know,
no.
We can learn from each other. You have if you have someone that is autistic or know someone that's autistic, then perhaps our stories can help better the next people who have, you know, who just found out their child has autism. And we
learn
can,
from our mistakes.
Yeah, learn from the mistakes because we were the forefront people with a child with autism.
Exactly. So stick around with us, guys. We'll be back in just a few minutes after these messages.
They went into the homes now, the powers that be. and told us that you cannot discipline your children anymore. And if you discipline your children, you were going to jail. Then they went into the public schools and took discipline out of there. So when we acted up in there, they put our boys into something called special ed classes. And as you know, those special ed classes are nothing but holding cells until they can go to the state prison. If we can have them convicted for a felony, then once they get out of prison, they cannot get a job because of that. And then if they happen to eke out and find a job, then they have to pay taxes on a job, yet they cannot vote. I call that taxation without representation. They did a grand thing when they took that discipline away from us, because when they made our parents afraid to discipline the children, then what happened? We found out that the teachers were afraid of the principals were scared of the superintendents, superintendent was scared of the school board was scared of the parents, parents were scared of the children, and the children ain't scared of nobody.
Brothers at Arms is not about being militant, though there is a time and place where that is necessary. Brothers at Arms is not about arguing, though there are times where things may get heated. Brothers at Arms is not about who is right or wrong. There are many sides to each issue. Brothers at Arms is about exploring those sides, about dealing with the issues facing us today, about coming together and, through opposing views, understanding the deeper truths that are in the middle. Join Ira Robinson and Joe Long each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on LateNightInTheMidlands.com as these Brothers at Arms discuss what you need to know. Brothers at Arms, it's about time. The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to LateNightInTheMidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed. Open Eyes seeks out the heart of matters, looking for explanations in places that most other radio hosts refuse to go. No subject is forbidden, and nothing remains hidden. Listen to Open Eyes on the Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network, weekdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Open minds, open hearts, open eyes.
So I want to challenge you all about what you think you know. You think that you're a human being and you know the way the world works, but I'm here to burst that bubble.
All of us are energy. A human being is a very complex pattern of energy.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward.
Much more important to teach children to question what they read. Children should be taught to question everything. Children should be taught to question authority. Parents never teach their children to question authority because parents are authority figures themselves.
Like it or not, for the moment, the earth is where we make our stand.
Just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love.
Because to be awoken means you're doing the work here to change this world right here in the now where you're at now. From where you're at now.
The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one.
It underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
But I'm exactly where I wanted to be because I realized I got to commit my very being to this thing. I got to breathe it. I got to eat it. I got to sleep it. And until you get there, you'll never be successful in life. But once you get there, I guarantee you, the world is yours. The world is yours.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to Open Eyes. For those of you who are just tuning in, my name is Ira, and tonight I have a special guest with me. It is my wife, Jolene.
Hello, hello.
We have her on tonight because of some kind of extraneous circumstances that have been going on this week, and I basically could not cover the topic that I wanted to cover tonight very effectively. So she's come on as a volunteer basis to help me out with tonight's show, and I think that it's been a really good one so far, and I hope that you guys out there have been enjoying it as well. So for this last little part of the show, which we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wanted to cover a topic that has been kind of pressing on my mind lately, and I thought that having Jolene here would be a perfect opportunity to do so. It's a topic that I guess you could say feel really strongly about, and it's one that I think I see a lot of people doing. Basically... Here's the deal. People are very strange, right, Jolene?
Of course they are.
As an example, on somebody's Facebook recently, I've been kind of floating through there and looking through different things and all that kind of good stuff. On someone's Facebook, on their timeline, I saw three pictures that were basically done in real quick succession. So... on one of them, it says to start each day with a focus on gratitude and joy. And that's very important to do, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I mean, I feel that the attitude of gratitude is one of the most important things that you can have, period, without any doubt whatsoever. And through that attitude of gratitude does come joy. You know, that's my thought anyway. Mm-hmm. That's what I found in my own life, and anybody that I talk to about that kind of thing really does find it in their own as well if they put it into practice. So I definitely recommend doing it. Anyways, so a little bit later, they posted another picture that
said...
same
person.
Yeah, the same person. They posted another picture saying, always stay true to yourself. Some people like it, some people won't. Life goes on. Now, again... I think that that's something very important.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I mean, for me, my attitude basically since my late teens has been essentially, if you don't like me for who and what I am, screw you. There are 7 billion other world, or 7 billion other people in the world who just might, and I'm not going to waste my time on trying to change your mind into liking me or wanting me to be around or whatever the case may be. I'm just not going to waste my time or energy. You're not worth it to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, something, again, that everybody really should learn and hold near and dear to their hearts. Like I said, my early teens years were really rough. And once I came up with that kind of an attitude, things have definitely been a lot better ever since. So again, something that's very important. Now, a little bit later then.
Same person.
posted another picture that said, "A woman can't change a man because she loves him. A man changes himself because he loves her." Now, I'd like to get your take on these three pictures so far, honey, and tell me what you think, you know, what comes to your mind with it.
Well, I know already that it's along your lines, because it's like the first two, yes, positive, absolutely positive. And then, you know, it's pretty much, you know, be grateful for everything and be true to yourself. Again, grateful for who you are. Last one, you know, woman can't change herself, man changes selves. it's okay, so be grateful, be true to yourself, but the man changes himself because he loves the woman. Well, why does he need to change himself because he loves the woman?
Right, exactly. That's exactly what comes into my mind, like right off with it, is, you know, so you have this person who is basically saying, well, I'm happy with who I am. I have to be grateful for who I am. I have to have joy with who I am. But if I'm going to be with somebody, they've got to change themselves to conform to what I want them to be. Even though it previously I say that everybody and anybody that reads this status should be true to yourself and not change for anybody.
Yeah. Don't change. You know, be true to yourself. But if you're a guy, you change yourself because you love the woman. Because you love the woman. That's how it words it, too. Because he loves the woman.
Right. And it's really, I guess, I don't know, it really kind of confuses me. Because when you have this kind of a thing in your mind, you know, just even posting this status, for instance, it's in your head. Okay? It you know, no matter what you read, no matter what you go through, it all is there rattling around in your brain pan somewhere, right?
Yeah, if that person specifically shared it, not that it was, they were tagged in it, but they specifically were shared in it, then that shows, yes, subconsciously in one way, shape, or form, they agree to it unless they say something otherwise, which the person said nothing otherwise.
Right, exactly.
They just shared it, they just shared it, and that was that. You know, no, can you believe this crap? You know, nothing like that.
Yeah. So, again, I mean, I see this exact same type of thing happening all the time. It's there. It's very prevalent on Facebook, for instance. I know it's prevalent everywhere on the internet, but, you know, I'm just giving this as an example.
Well, it's so much easier to be, to have your true self come out on the internet because you don't have to face the people.
Yeah, there's a level of anonymity to everything that you do, even if your profile is actually your true profile, you know?
Yeah, so you get the freedom to be more of your true self. And in ways we really shouldn't, you know, we really shouldn't be as free with our true selves, because, I mean, let's face it, you can just look at anybody's Facebook status, and every once in a while, there's those people that will say something, and you just go, did you think it through before you actually said that, you know?
Think before you post, people. Everything that you do online is online forevermore. It's never going to go away, no matter how much you want to see it removed.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you look at memes and whatnot, and it's like there's one I've seen it before where it's like, you know, how do you pronounce the word tomato? Do you pronounce it tomato or tomato? Which obviously they're saying tomato or tomato, but they spelled it the same way both ways. And so all the people that replied, this was on Facebook, all the people that replied were, well, I prefer tomato, although tomato does work, you know, and it's all this, because it's like, did you think it through before you worded that? I mean, you should have made you know, parentheses as in tomato, T-O-E, or tomato, you know, you should have, but they didn't. So it's like, did you really think it through before you posted this?
Yeah, exactly. And I see people like posting like sexy pics and whatever on there and, oh crap, how do I delete this? And
yeah. It's
again, anything that you do is forever more online. But anyway, so getting to the idea with this, if you are loving somebody, for instance, which I think is what this kind of last thing comes down to, right? Because if the man loves the woman, then he's supposed to change for her. And if she loves him, then she's not going to change because she loves him and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So to me, love is unconditional. There's no strings that are attached to it. There are no buts with love. It's either you love or you don't. It's, you know, an on off switch. There might be kind of degrees to it, but true love is going to be that way at its core. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
I mean, that's how I feel. And I know that a lot of other people do feel that way out there as well. So with something like this, basically what you're demanding is that the other person changes for you, but you're just not going to change. You're just going to be whoever you are, you know, and
sit back and cash in the rewards.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really, I guess it gets my goat. It annoys me because you can't expect somebody to change and still say that you love them. I mean, I've had the experience of knowing somebody over the years who told me the night or the day that they were getting married, that the person that they were marrying, they expected they would end up changing once they got married. You know, that they were not in love with them as much as they could be, but they saw the potential there. And so once they got married, they'd be able to change them into the person that they wanted them to be. So why the frick get married?
and yet that person is probably like the most offended by the idea of, oh yeah, mind control, you know, government's mind controlling us. Yeah. And you're expecting to do the same to him.
Yes, exactly. Yes. You've got it exactly. That's a really good point, honey. I like that one. I may use that one in the future.
You're welcome then.
So, you know, it just kind of annoys me, I guess you could say. And I wanted to bring it here because there really is kind of this dark psychology or maybe that's not even the right word for it. Kind of maybe a darkness to it, spiritually, I guess you could say, because when you are acting in this kind of way, when whatever you do, everything that you do, whatever energy you put out is going to come back to you. So if you are putting out this kind of negative type of thing, you're going to end up getting negative back.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they understand the idea behind it because, you know, the previous couple of things that they had posted were all positive and, you know, hey, this is how you're supposed to be.
Be grateful and be true to yourself. However, here's the stipulation.
Yeah, be grateful and be true to – I need to be grateful and be true to myself, but the person that I'm with has to change their ways in order to conform to what I want them to be.
Yeah, because I am the grateful one. I am the angelic one, and you are not, because yeah, you are not me.
It reminds me of the Black Friday shopping thing kind of thing. You know, the day before Black Friday is Thanksgiving. You spend the day being, you know, thinking about and being thankful for the things that you have. And then you go out on Black Friday and kill, maim, destroy, and otherwise act stupidly to get more stuff.
Yeah. It's...
There's no sense in it. You know, you're obviously not acting in accordance with the person that you think you are. This is the type of thing, I guess you could say, that shows people's true colors.
Oh, yes.
Is what it comes down to. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get at with all of this. If you're wanting to be a person that is, you know, a positive person or a person who kind of wants the best out of life, I guess you could say, then, you know, you have to act in accordance with that. You have to be grateful for the things that you have. Because if you're grateful for what you have, you're going to be grateful for anything else that you get as well. You know, I've been at the point in my life where I have had, like, not even a pot to piss in, literally. And I've still been grateful for what I had because I knew that I could be worse off, you know? But then I see things like this going on. And I guess, like I said, it just kind of it shows the people's true colors is what it comes down to.
Yeah, in a big way. It's not good.
Yeah, it's sad to me because, you know, I could see that people could be so much better off, you know, if they practice gratitude. You know, the practice, that attitude of gratitude can really make all of the difference in your life. It's a matter of appreciating what you have again, because there are so many people that are out there that are worse off than you. No matter how bad you think you have it, there are a lot of people out there that have it a lot worse.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So having an attitude of gratitude about what you do have in your hands or in your life or, you know, whatever it may be, really can make a big difference. Because when you, at least for me, and I'm not trying to like go into the whole, the secret thing where you have to think positive and you'll get positive in your life and all that kind of stuff. But you know, there is a level that goes on with all of it, that if you do kind of show appreciation or gratitude, you will end up seeing more in your life to be grateful for, because it's like it kind of opens up doors once you've seen how you're grateful for the things that you have. Suddenly you'll realize, hey, wait a minute, I actually have more than I thought that I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's like you can think of it on a lesser scale. It's like if you show a child you're grateful for something, they're gonna obviously keep doing that. And know that, okay, if I do this, then this is a good thing. Not, you know, oh, you did this, but I'm ungrateful that you did this, you know, not just totally skipping over everything else, you know.
Yeah, kind of like if your kid does a chore, you know, if your kid does a chore, you could at least say thank you for doing the chore, even though that was something that you told them to do to begin with, right?
Or you can even switch it up. Say the child decided to do the chore on their own and, you know, like say wash the dishes, and then they get done and you go out and the countertop is wet. You didn't dry the dishes enough. Okay, well, the child didn't have to do that. And you could say thank you, show that you're grateful. And then if you want to speak of those topics, then say something, but make sure you show them, hey, I appreciate that you did this.
Right, exactly. I mean, that really is kind of a form of child abuse. When you think about it, it does abuse the child. It does damage the child because it changes the way that they're going to act from that point on in the future.
Yeah, they're going to know, okay, well, obviously, if I want to please my parent, doing a chore is not going to be the way, even though in a way it did, you know.
Yeah.
They
yeah,
may say
exactly.
Otherwise, but.
Now, this does not go into the parents that overpraise, you know. It's what was the news story that I brought a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, where studies have shown that people or parents who show extreme doting on their kids will turn their kids into narcissists.
Yeah, which that definitely, that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, excessively praising your kids can turn them into narcissists, but yet that doesn't mean not to praise them at all, you know, because that'll turn them into sociopaths.
And again, you can put that on a larger scale. If you're exceedingly happy for everything, then yes, you will become a narcissist in that way too, you know? Oh, I'm grateful for this one little grain of rice. Oh, I'm grateful for this bill. You know, I mean, make it thing.
Thank you, electric company, for charging me money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in both ways, as above, so below, as within, as without, you know, it's anything that you can think of on a small scale is the same in a big scale. Yes, you overpraise a child, it's going to do harm in one way, shape, or form. You're too grateful for everything, and yes, it's going to be, you know, you need to have that happy balance.
Yes, exactly. It's that, it's the macro and micro cosm kind of scale that you're speaking of there. And that is something that is definitely an intriguing topic to me. I love thinking about that kind of thing. But, well, listen, guys, we are actually out of time, surprisingly.
It's been too fast.
This night has gone really fast, exactly. So I know, I do. It's been a lot of fun having you here because you can respond to topics that I talk about sometimes when I'm blathering on to you in the middle of the day. But is there anything that you want to add to as a final thought here?
No, not really. Just listen more. People listen more.
I agree fully.
Listen more to all the shows, not just this one, obviously. But
yep, exactly.
This one, yes, this one. Make this one your favorite.
And we're not being narcissistic about it. Anyways, so
yeah, no.
If you want to go to the show notes for this show, please go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE088. Again, if you want to send us an email about anything, send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. We definitely appreciate and we respond to everything that we get. If you want to reach us on Facebook and Twitter, you can go to both of those platforms were Ira Robinson and Open Eyes Network. And on Monday, I'm not sure exactly what the topic will be yet. I think I will go ahead and do the Old World Order versus the New World Order on that day. But one way or the other, that show will air 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on latenightinthemidlands.com. Be sure to go to our archives. All of our shows are available at openeyesnetwork.com. You can listen to all of our shows. We have hundreds of hours available of listening pleasure. And be sure to keep an eye out as well. Just within a couple of weeks from now, we're going to start airing the Adventures in Autism show as well. And also the movies with My Sheltered Wife we're going to be doing as well. But you can find out all of that information on openeyesnetwork.com. Make sure you tune back in Monday, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, latenightinthemidlands.com.